You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and radiocafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking to Joel Alberts, Executive Director of the Lenzic Performing Arts Center here in Santa Fe. Right now, I'm very happy to welcome David Epley, also known as Dr. Kaboom. He is doing a one-man show called Dr. Kaboom, It's Just Rocket Science, at the Lenzic Performing Arts Center here in Santa Fe on Sunday, the 8th of April. It's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's a family show. Welcome.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. It's nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Good to talk to you, too. So you do a show in which you kind of take on the persona of a German rocket scientist, and you show kids how to do science. How did you develop this character?
That's an excellent question. I grew up expecting to be a scientist. I went to a special high school for science geeks and had to take the SAT to get in, that kind of thing. We had PhDs teaching most of our classes, and it was a bit of a boarding school. And we had a mini-vac mainframe computer with campus-wide internet before the internet. So it was a pretty amazing place. And when I was there, I actually discovered how much I liked performing. So when I got into college, I started studying chemical engineering and acting, and very quickly moved straight into acting. I loved it so much. And then I spent 20 years working as an actor, primarily at festivals, outdoor events. And when I turned 40, I decided I wanted to bring science back in and see what happened. And I put the two passions together, and it kind of took over my whole world.
Was there a lot of new stuff that you wanted to incorporate once you went back into science, since the kind of high-level science education you'd had as a high school student? Had science changed a lot?
Well, science, of course, is always growing and always learning. People like to say science changes its mind, but, you know, it doesn't. It just keeps adding new information. And so, of course, in the things that I had studied, everything had grown. We had learned in every direction. So a lot had changed. There was a lot of new information, even on the most basic levels. For example, when I was a kid, we learned about the three states of matter, solid, liquid, and gas. Well, now we teach children solid, liquid, gas, and plasma. There are, of course, many more states than that. But at our most basic level now, we've improved or expanded upon what we teach as a basic sense of knowledge. So that's an example of just those tiny bits, little bits that add up as we learn and expand our knowledge of science. What we teach as a foundation for science also has to expand accordingly. For what I do, I'm not out there teaching quantum physics.
Right.
Most of my audiences are families and school students who get bussed into theaters. So I'm there to reiterate and expand upon the basic knowledge that we teach in schools and hopefully open up people's curiosity a little bit more.
Tell us what your shows are like, and maybe you could put Dr. Kaboom on the mic for a few minutes as well. What are some of the things that you do on stage?
Dr. Kaboom, I decided when I built the show that I wanted to build a character first and have the comedy for the show come out of the character. Anybody can walk on stage and do science demonstrations, but I really wanted to wrap some sort of persona around them in a way that was fun and exciting for the audience members, and hopefully make it more likely that things will be remembered, that lessons will be learned. So I created the character of Dr. Kaboom, who is German, with spiky bleached blonde hair, chrome goggles, an orange lab coat, and motorcycle boots with flames on the side. And he sort of sees himself as a superstar of science, but shares a passion for the audience. So he'll come on stage, and it's all about the interactions between him and the audience and the demonstrations. So there's a three-way reaction going on, interaction. There's no fourth wall, which means I talk directly to the audience. We can interact together. I bring people up on stage and make audience volunteers the hero of the moment, all while taking tabletop demonstrations, making them bigger, and wrapping the character around them so they're a bit ridiculous and silly. So if you want to meet Dr. Kaboom, he walks on stage and he introduces himself as, "Hello, my friends. I am Heinrich von Schwattau. My friends call me Dr. Kaboom, man of science. Dr. Kaboom is a nickname from experiment with a cannon on a hamster. It did not work. But you never saw such a look of surprise on a hamster's face in your life." And I go on from there.
Right. Thank you, Dr. Kaboom. So,
yeah.
How do you involve the audience? I mean, you're going to be in a big theater, the Lenzic, which has something like 800 seats. How do you kind of like get them all to be part of the action?
Well, I have a couple of things I do right in the very start of the show. I make it very clear with audience interaction that they have a role in the show, that the audience is encouraged to yell, shout, laugh, scream, turn to the person beside them and talk about what just happened. And I set some ground rules for when, for being able to bring them back. Basically, because I'm going to do a lot of exciting, fun things. I'm going to do some funny things. I'm going to do maybe some things that make you question or even can be a little frightening, depending on which show I'm doing. And I want to give the audience the opportunity to react to all of that. I don't want to just fire them things at them nonstop. And so very early on, I let them know that they have a part to play. I get the entire audience interacting and responding all at once, which is quite a lot of fun. I do shows where I have 3,000 people and they're all cheering together or booing together or laughing together or in awe together. There's a lot of spectacle to science. So you really want to give them the opportunity to take that in for a moment and talk about it with the people sitting around them, react to it and interact about it. And then I bring them back to what's going on. On a very simple level, I'll do a lot of call and response. I get them yelling, yeah, and kaboom. And those are very fun. I get emails all the time from parents or teachers who are like months or even sometimes years later saying, you know, we went into the kitchen and opened the door to the refrigerator and the milk fell out and spilled all over the floor. And my daughter and I both looked at each other and yelled, kaboom! Of interaction really helps it sink in and helps, and it stays with you. You carry it forward, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it's a great character. I watched some of the YouTubes of you as Dr. Kaboom, and you can kind of step into a sort of like funny authoritarian sort of science guy persona. But I was wondering, like, it's one thing to put on a show, it's entertainment, it's a spectacle, but then there's that other thing, which is getting kids, getting young people, maybe adults sometimes too, to see in a new way, to enter that kind of like empirical, experimental headspace. Are you able to go there when you're on stage, when you've got these kids on stage with you? Do you see those little light bulbs going off in their minds?
Oh, absolutely. What a great question. That's one of my primary goals, because it's easy to go and do some big things on stage and have people go, wow, and ooh. My goal is to show students and to remind adults that science is not just something you look at or something you read, that it's something you do. And it's best if you do it together, and that it's for everyone. The particular show I'm doing at the Lensic is all about that. I call it It's Just Rocket Science, and I, because of the phrase, it's not rocket science, which I've never been a fan of, because that phrase tells us that science is hard and that rocket science is hard. I try to get the point across to adults and the kids that science is not hard. It just takes effort, and that doesn't make something hard. That just makes it worthwhile.
Yeah.
That anything worth putting effort into is going to pay off. And I use the example of music. I talk about how the guitar is a complex instrument. You can't just pick it up and start playing beautiful music. But if you apply yourself over time, you can play the guitar. And that science is the same way, that if you apply yourself, you can do science, that it's literally for everyone. I think a big part of that, and I'll talk about this sometimes too, is that we have this mindset that we're supposed to be right and we're supposed to know the answer. And that's completely the opposite of what science is about. So people think science is hard because they don't know the answer, when the only thing science is about finding the answer. If you already know it, there's no reason to do the science. And this is so true that in science, it doesn't even matter if you're right or wrong. It only matters that you learn. So I really try to cement that and open up, in particular, parents' minds to that. I have parents that tell me, I can't do science with my kid. And yeah, sure you can. I mean, I'm talking about fifth grade science here. You don't have to have remembered it, but all you have to do is learn it together. That's all it is. And so that question ties beautifully into that. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, I mean, you were a science kid. You went to this specialized high school. By the way, how did you get interested in science in the first place? I mean, before you became an actor, what took you down that path? Did you have a particularly good teacher?
I had fortunately had a number of good teachers. I also, fortunately, my brain is wired that way. I was fortunate enough to find as a kid that science made sense to me. The logical process, the objective learning style. I mean, to have an idea and then to test it and find out what the truth is. And so that's the basics of science. And it thrilled me as a kid. It made sense to me. And I was the kid that always got the science. So up to a point, it was, quote unquote, easy for me. But of course, only up to a point, because it still requires effort.
Right.
So it was my first passion. I loved it. It thrilled me. My curiosity was awakened by scientific concepts and exploration. And so I drifted in that direction very early in my childhood. And I grew up in North Carolina, and the North Carolina School of Science and Mathematics is a two-year residential high school there. We were in the fourth class back in the 80s, and there were 200 kids in our school. Really, it was an amazing place to go and be surrounded by hundreds of brilliant science and math-minded people. It was quite exciting.
At that time, was it more boys than girls?
In the school?
Yeah.
I don't believe so, no.
Interesting. I mean, this is something that, because, I mean, boys and girls are equally interested in science and STEM, engineering, all of that, math. And yet, by the time they become adults, it tends to be more male-oriented. And I was wondering what you see when you're on the road. I mean, do you see boys and girls equally interested? Do you think the gender biases around science are changing?
I fervently hope those biases are changing, and I try to do my part as much as possible. Yes, I think boys and girls are equally interested in scientific and mathematical pursuits, and I think something about our culture has pushed young women away from it as they grow older. And I think that's really detrimental, because science is about learning and problem solving, and the more people you have coming together to solve a problem from different backgrounds, the more ideas and creativity you can come. It all comes from, we all bring what we have to the table. And if I'm a guy and you're a girl, we're going to have different ideas and different mindsets and different experiences to apply to solving any given problem. And I think science is all about collaboration. So we need people from everywhere. It really is systemic. I read an article a couple of years ago that in the sciences, even if a woman is hiring someone, she is more likely to hire a man than a woman and more likely to pay a man more than a woman. So that's how culturally systemic it is in the scientific community. And I believe that's changing. I hope a lot of what's going on with empowerment of our young girls in this country is really just going to keep steamrolling, because we need it.
You have daughters. Do they share your passion for science?
I have two. I have a daughter and a stepdaughter, and they both love science. At this point, I would be surprised if either of them went into a scientific field of study, but they're only 13 and 14. They both love music. They both love dance. They both love the arts. They're at that age where they love everything. We're very fortunate that they're both in advanced levels in their grades for mathematics and science, as well as other subjects. So the world is wide open to them. So we'll see.
Do you think science, like a strong science background, makes people better thinkers in other areas, like in the arts, in politics, in literature, things like that?
Wow. My initial response is to say yes. I think objective and empirical reasoning is a better way to solve just about any problem. The reality of that is, of course, that most people aren't trained in that kind of process, and no one, no matter how hard they try, is perfectly objective in their reasoning. They can't keep their emotions completely out of it. We're not Vulcans. So I think it's a powerful tool. I think it is an empowering tool to be able to sit back, recognize your own biases, recognize the biases of others, and come at an empirical line of questioning to solve a problem. Now, on the other side of that is that I think creativity is absolutely necessary to the process. So when people talk about STEM a lot, and there's also been a push for STEAM, you know, so there's a great push for science, tech, engineering, and mathematics, and that is magnificent. I just want to make sure that we don't forget the arts, because the arts are where we all learn that we are creative and where we all learn how to explore and apply our own creativity. And so I like to say that if we just focus on STEM, we'll have a nation of lab technicians. But if we include the arts, then we end up with a nation of innovators.
Well, and if you speak to, I mean, we have here in Santa Fe, the Santa Fe Institute, and I've interviewed many scientists from there, and at the highest level, science is a fundamentally creative endeavor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, which is exactly why we need to foster that in children that might pursue those careers. I had a physicist once say to me, when I said that to him about the arts, he said, well, I think physicists are creative. And I said, well, that's not my point. Physicists are good at math. That doesn't mean we don't teach them math. My point is to give them the best tools to explore that aspect of themselves so they can apply it in that environment. And I think the deeper you get into scientific study, the more outside the box thinking is absolutely required. So the better we can prepare our students for that, the better off we all are.
Where do you take your show? Do you take it all over the country? Do you take it outside the U.S.?
I perform almost entirely inside the U.S., all over the country. I do also perform internationally. I've been very fortunate. The moment I decided to do this, it was just kind of on a whim, and it was bringing, you know, my first passion back into my life and applying it, mixing it with my second, which is performing, and it took over my whole world, and it instantly took off. 3 months into my first tour, I was booked for the next year at the Kennedy Center. I mean, I've been that blessed by this experience, for lack of a better word, and it's gotten me all over the world. I've gone to Singapore, Ireland several times, Northern Ireland. I go to Canada every other year. I get inquiries from all over the world throughout the year, and all just, but because of most of my time is already booked here in the United States, I'm kind of limited to when I can go overseas.
Have you noticed any differences in how kids in different places in different parts of the country or the world respond to your show?
In terms of the science, no. Everywhere I've gone, people are fascinated by the spectacle of science, what you can do with it, what it is. Comedy is the thing that makes a difference, and because so much of that is cultural or even language oriented. You know, it's not even just with foreign language, but just with colloquialisms, slang. You know, I've learned in countries to have to change the way I say a joke just because of word choice, or that a joke just will not work in a particular culture because of that subject isn't funny or entertaining on any level.
Interesting.
Yeah, I had a friend who had a great example of it. They're nonverbal clowns, but not like circus clowning, but like European style clowning, physical comedy. Brilliant performers, a theater of fools is what they're called. And they years ago were touring Asia, and they had a piece in one of their shows where they took a woman's purse out of the audience and pretended to pull different things out of it, you know, being funny about each one. And in the United States, they would get to a point, oh, this was 25 years ago, so it's a little different than right now, but they would pull out a tiny pistol, and the audience would roar that this woman had a little gun in her purse. Of course, she didn't. It was a plant, and it wasn't a real gun. But when they pulled that joke in other countries, the audience did not laugh at all, and in fact went the opposite direction, and they quickly learned that they had to cut that. So you have to adjust your comedy based on the cultural setting you're in. But for the most part, because mine is interactive, based on what's happening, what the audience is doing, what my volunteers are doing, and what happens on stage with the demonstrations, because, you know, it's live, they don't always go the way you expect. I run into that a lot less because it's really based on the situation that I'm in that given moment.
What do you think is the optimal age to get kids really fired up about science?
I think every kid is interested when they see it. I think the elementary school levels, it's really easy to get students interested in it. I think it's in middle school when kids start to turn away from it. And I think that's all tied into it takes more effort, or in their minds, harder to get the right answer, to get the right grade. And so science gets more in depth, it requires more focus, and it starts to require more of the student. And that's when people start pushing away from it. I guess my answer is that the most important time to focus on a kid's interest in science is in middle school. It's fifth grade and up, because around fifth grade, you can really take that fascination they've always had and start to shape it into something that's hopefully lifelong, as long as you can remind them that it just takes effort and that it is for everybody. Because I really believe culturally we think science is only for certain people in the United States, and we're damaging ourselves with that mindset.
I have a friend who's an engineer who likes to quote his friend who works at NASA, who used to say to him, Dave, rocket science? It's not rocket science.
I love it. Well, one of the things I do to disprove that statement in this show is I blow up a balloon and let it go. That's rocket science.
Right.
That's the foundation of rocket science, action or reaction. And people are like, it's not rocket science, as if it's something hard. And I'm like, sure, when you really get into applications of rocket science, you get into higher levels of mathematics and you have to have special training. And that takes a lot of focus and effort, but it still doesn't make it hard. It just makes it work. And that's not the same thing. But it really is fun to point out to kids and to their parents, I just blew this up and let it go, and you can do it too, and that's literally rocket science.
What is your hope for your shows, and what are some of the most sort of interesting or unexpected things that have happened during your shows?
Oh my goodness. My hope with my shows is that audiences will go home and do science together. that parents that come to see the show will go home and interact with their kids on a physical level, finding something online or something from my show and going outside or in the kitchen and doing something physical that is a scientific process together. I also like to empower students. I found out early on, I realized I can do more than just science. I can talk to kids on stage about self-confidence, about things as simple as how to stand in front of an audience to hold a position of strength, looking people in the eyes when you're talking to them, developing those kind of confidence building and confidence based skill sets. So I focus a lot on that too. As far as interesting things that have happened during shows, everything that I've tried and done on stage has gone wrong on stage in a performance in every kind of way that it can, without knock on wood, injury, just all in fun, silly ways, chemical reactions that have gone overboard, physical reactions that have done ridiculous, unexpected things, letting go of that balloon and having it fly all over the audience and then disappear into the ceiling and not fall back down because it's up in the darkness, caught up somewhere. But really the most magical moments for me are the things where things unexpectedly go right, or when some child is on stage. And well, here's a fun one. I have a routine in one of my shows where I demonstrate the scientific method by testing my hypothesis that the catapult was not invented as a weapon of war, but as a way to feed people. So I have a tabletop catapult and I shoot pieces of banana across the stage to an audience member who's trying to catch them wearing goggles and trying to catch them only using their mouth. And I had this young man on stage and he was fantastic. The audience absolutely loved him. And I let it go for about 20 minutes. I worked through all the stages of the scientific method. I have lots of jokes, lots of lessons in the course of the event. And then at the end of it, I get them into a position where I've settled them down. I've got them to focus and I lob one right to them and I let them catch one. And the moment they do, the audience goes insane. And I had a woman come up to me after that particular show and she was in tears. She was the mother of that young man and he was autistic. And they had worked with him his whole life trying to give him as normal a process as possible. And when I pulled him up on stage and made him the hero, and when he succeeded in front of all of those people, she was just floored by that moment. Nobody knew but her family. You know, nobody, there was nothing, no telltale signs with the child that, but he was just, because he was so empowered by that moment, his mother was just in tears, and we've actually become friends. We've chatted for years.
Did he catch the banana in his mouth?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That was, yeah, when I lobbed it to him and he caught it and the audience went nuts for him. That was such a reward, not just for him, but for her as well.
Yeah.
To see her son be treated like anybody else and to thrive. And this is really all about theater, not science. This is just the power of interactive theater. It's stunning. I had did a show a few years ago and pulled audience members up during the whole show. And the first time I asked for audience volunteers, a lot of people volunteer. By the end of it, every kid in the audience is dying to get on stage because I give them moments to be the hero of the show. And the very last piece of the show, I asked for a volunteer and every kid was screaming. And there was this young man dressed very nicely sitting right on the front row, right on the edge of his seat. And for the first time in the show, I saw him with his hand up and he was just silent and just had his hand up. So I pulled him up on stage. And he was a little bit young, but I did this chemical reaction with him and he was fantastic. The audience ate him up. He was beautiful. And then 2 weeks later, I get an email from the theater. The parents were hoping that someone had recorded it because the kid had been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome and just doesn't talk to people. And to have him come up on stage and the character be able to pull him completely out of that shell, you know, that gives me goosebumps just talking about it. And they said he had come more out of his shell than they'd ever seen him. And he had not gone all the way back into
that
shell.
Interesting. That's so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the power of theater, the power of interactive theater, it's people, you know, we're so used to things on screens that we forget how powerful something happening right in front of you is because an audience is part of it. It's just a beautiful thing.
The understanding of autism and Asperger's and the autism spectrum is a work in progress and continually changing, but my understanding is that most of those young people are very intellectually gifted and they've got other problems and the social interaction and coming out of their shell and so on. But when they learn to basically interact with the rest of society and learn sort of basic manners, they end up in science and engineering a lot of the time and in software and so on.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. I'm certainly not an expert on the subject and don't really know much about it beyond what I've read online and experienced personally. And that's what I've been told too. I mean, of course it's spectrum. There are individuals that will never be self-sufficient, but at a certain range, you know, any kid that's been diagnosed as autistic that can develop social interactive skill sets that allow them to be self-sufficient. I've seen and heard a lot of that too. There's a lot of mental acuity and intellect behind those eyes that don't want to look you in the eyes.
David Epley is also known as Dr. Kaboom. His show, Dr. Kaboom, It's Just Rocket Science, is one day only at the Lenzic Center for Performing Arts here in Santa Fe on Sunday, the 8th of April. It's 3 o'clock. It's a family show. For more, you can go to ticketssantafe.org. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks. Can I say one more thing real quick?
Sure.
The key word there is family show. This is not a children's show. It's not a magic show. It's a show that is for everybody in the family. Everyone will have a good time. Everyone will laugh hard. And I promise you, everybody in the family will learn something and have a good time doing it. So I hope people will come out and join us.
Excellent. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Mary Charlotte.
And I'm delighted now to welcome Joel Alberts. He's Executive Director of the Lenzic Center for Performing Arts. Welcome.
Thank you. It's so good to be with you today.
So you've been here in Santa Fe for almost 2 years, and you are programming the Lenzic in interesting ways, including Dr. Kaboom, whom we just heard.
Right.
Did you choose him?
I did. I've had some fabulous experiences with Dr. Kaboom. I saw him first at a showcase at a conference a few years ago, and then I brought him into my last theater as well. I actually made my wife take a morning off of work so she could come to the school matinee. We had a date to the school matinee because I think he's just so marvelous, and he is a performer that the parents enjoy just as much as the kids do, because he has just this kind of unique, wonderful way that he improvises his way through, and he has this persona on stage that's just so thrilling. And then you get the joy of watching these kids learn real science. So he's got so much going for him. I think he's just a treasure.
The Lenzic has such a long history and really great reputation for serving such a variety of audiences and performers. What is your programming philosophy for this theater?
Well, one of the things that I think is so amazing about the Lenzic is we are in a city that people choose to live in because of the artistic opportunities that happen here. And what I want to do with the diversity of the community that we have and with the interest that people have in all these different cultures and all of these different art forms, that there is something for everyone. I also have small kids at home, relatively small kids. They are now 10 and 12. And I know there are a lot of families in this community. So having opportunities, in addition to providing world music and dance and classical music and all of the other things that people gravitate to in a community like Santa Fe, is to give some real options for families that they can go and do something together, and that the Lenzic is a home for them as well. We have a number of different communities that kind of come in and out of this building based on the programs that are here. And family programming, I think, is a real important part of that, that you need to be able to experience live performance with your children the same way that you would go out on a date, or that a retiree would come down and spend an evening here as well.
And part of that, I would think, is making quote-unquote adult programming accessible to entire families.
Oh, absolutely. And there is family programming, and there's family-friendly programming as well. And that we recognize that there are events that are really targeted to an older audience, but understanding that this is something that's also accessible for younger people to come to. And of course, with the education and outreach programs we do here, we're also giving opportunities for those artists to interact with students and others throughout their time in Santa Fe as well. Last year, we engaged just under 15,000 children in an education and outreach program. And literally half of the things that we have on this year's schedule have an education or outreach component. And next year, which we'll announce on June 7, is at 3/4.
Oh my goodness.
And, you know, there's a real investment in doing that. And it's important for me that young people are exposed to all of these different things. This is the time that you just sort of cast the net for them. And if you, I'm mixing my metaphors here, but if you get a bite from one of them, if it changes the way that they think about something, that's a win.
And I think probably everybody remembers some memorable performance or movie or something from their childhood.
Absolutely.
And you don't think of it when you're an adult, oh, this movie's going to change this, because you never know which thing it's going to be.
Right.
Now, when you talk about the education outreach components, what does that look like? Are you going into the community or?
It's a mix of a lot of things. We have a terrific school time matinee program that happens here. Dr. Kaboom will do his family program with us on the Sunday, the 8th, and then he's going to be here on Monday, the 9th, with two almost completely sold out school matinees. So great. So we have a number of those things that go on throughout the year.
Meaning that kids do
that
a field trip to the Lensic.
Students come and, right, buses drop kids off or kids walk from nearby schools and come to see programs here. But we're also bringing artists out into the schools. And we had a great example of that when Aquila Theater was here with Hamlet. And we did a couple of outreach programs that brought some of those actors out into the schools in Santa Fe to do workshops with more advanced theater students. It's Hamlet, so we're looking more at a high school age group. But trying to find ways that we're fitting these artists into programs that exist within the public schools, or we've brought artists out to IAIA, to the Santa Fe Indian School, looking for places where it's the best fit, and we can have a education program that allows for development for students who already know something about it, and use some of the school matinees thing as an opportunity to expose a larger group to something that they've maybe not been introduced to before.
Have you gotten feedback from students or from teachers?
Oh, all the time, yeah. And from the organizers with the public schools who make these things happen. We get letters that come back, you know, and they're wonderful. And the other great thing about doing programs like this, when you're working with elementary students, really all you have to do is be standing at the door when kids are leaving, and you get immediate impact on how that connection went. Because they're buzzing about things and they're talking about things. They're very in the moment still as they're leaving the theater. And you know what kind of an impact you've had in that. That's a very exciting thing for us to do. It's something that I think everyone here is very passionate about, engaging the arts in ways that are sowing a seed for a new generation.
What are some of the things that are coming up that you're most excited about?
Well, we have I'm not going to tip the hat on all the cool things that we have coming for next season. We're going to save those until we have all of our materials together.
We can do another show.
We should do another show. That would be great. We have a few things coming up yet this year that I think are great. The last show that we have booked in this 17-18 season is a group called Jacob Jonas The Company. It's a dance company out of Los Angeles. Jacob is 25 years old now. He's a very young choreographer, and he's a very wise choreographer. He's had great mentors. He's done a lot of things that are really interesting. But the thing that makes Jacob really fascinating is what he does in social media. He created this program called Cameras and Dancers, and you can go to his Instagram feed and look to other things, or just use the hashtag Cameras and Dancers. And what he's done is he's taken, it's a photography piece. It's beautiful art, where you're using the physicality, the beauty of the dancer, and you're putting them in iconic locations. So he has these amazing things that are done at the Disney Concert Hall, at the Pier in Santa Monica, in New York City and Seattle. Whenever they travel, they're working with social media influencers who are coming and photographing the artists in the iconic locations of that community.
Still images.
And some videos as well, but all very short form, as you would expect from social media. But that's something that they're going to be doing when they're in Santa Fe as well. They're going to be going to the many iconic locations we have in our community and doing these photos. And one of the things that I think is exciting about this is that this is something that our younger dance audience is clued into. And they'll be excited to see these dancers who are doing these kind of amazing things come to their community. They're really relating with a younger dance audience. And then the other thing that's great for Santa Fe is that we will have these fabulous photos of dancers in our community. And this is a community that is rich with a dance culture. You look at what NDI is contributing to it. You look at the social dances from our Hispanic and Native American communities. There's a wealth of dance that's going on here. And what a great way to celebrate that that's happening in our home. So there's a couple different narratives that go on with him that I think are just really exciting. And kind of a new look at what we've done for dance here at the Lensic as well.
And a big shout out to the two young dancers from NDI who have recently been accepted to Juilliard in New York.
Isn't that fantastic? Yeah. I mean, and this is why this investing in youth arts education is so important.
Yeah.
You know, not only is it great for their academic success, but it gives you something to hope for. It gives you something that fills up parts of your life and makes it all more exciting. So we're excited to be a part of that.
Joel Alberts is executive director of the Lensic Center for Performing Arts. And on top of everything else, you are also a marathon runner.
It's true.
That's still a passion for
you? It is still. Yeah. I have run one since we moved to Santa Fe. And there are these points in my life that I get the itch that I need to start looking for my next race. So I've been kind of maybe something yet this spring, but probably looking at a couple in the fall.
How's the altitude for you?
Oh, it's good now. It was it took about a week and a half to be fully ready to go. It's good, but let me tell you, when you go to other places, you are Superman.
Exactly.
It's fantastic.
Well, thanks so much for being
Thank
on the
you.
Program.
I appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte. This program is brought to you in part by Dotfoil Computer Services, providing computer repair and business services for Apple and PC. They're Santa Fe's only Apple-authorized service provider. You can find them on the web at dotfoil.com and in the Candyman Center in Santa Fe. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send any feedback on the show, ideas, or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.